Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:39 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 23rd. I'm recording a little earlier than normal today because I'm a little pressed for time. But I thought that this graphic that came out today with the updating of the corporate profits chart is particularly instructive because it helps to highlight that the last time we had such a wide divergence between the market cap on the S&P 500 and corporate profits hasn't been anything even approaching this wide since at least 1999. It also helps to highlight that the corporate profits really did improve considerably into the peak in 2007 and 8, and they declined pretty much in line with the market cap of the index into the lows in 2009. They both rallied in lockstep until approximately 2013, and then we saw a significant divergence. And it is, I think, particularly relevant that when we look at the NASDAQ, it is approximating that chart of the market cap of the S&P 500. Now, it is up in additional positive territory today and appears to be pulling away from the psychological 10,000 level. We've had really very strong performances in here today from some of the largest companies in the world. Apple, following its developers conference, was up in robust fashion, although it hasn't been able to hold onto all of the advance yet in here today. Microsoft was also up in strong positive territory in and surmounting the $200 area for the first time. Netflix has also been pulling away from the most recent range, which was put in at above the $400 level and the previous peak. Facebook has also pushed on the upside in here today. So we have to at least start to put some of the potential items together. The first is that with corporate profits declining and the market cap on the wider market expanding, then the conditions for bubbly territory have been met. So the primary support for the market is liquidity, and it is increasingly likely that we are going to see the Federal Reserve's balance sheet expand to approximately $10 trillion by the end of the year. But it did contract last week, and there is maybe a transition going on right now from the incredibly quick pace of assistance that was provided in March, April, and May to a more modest pace of assistance. And that could contribute to some slowdown in the pace of the stock market advance. But an outright decline in the quantity of liquidity being provided would really be required to question the medium-term potential for additional upside. Because the trillions of dollars, euros, yen, pounds, and francs that are being plowed into the market are directly responsible for asset price inflation. And that is exactly what governments and central banks are trying to achieve. They're chasing inflation with everything they've got because they are terrified of deflation. But then we have to look at, well, why are stocks giving up part of their advance as we approach the close? It could easily be because of the three primaries that are coming through for the Democratic Party in here today. And the big question is whether progressive upstart candidates are capable of overtaking establishment figures. That's most particularly true of the race that's going on in New York, where you have an advocate, or I guess Ocasio, I can't remember exactly her name, but I think everyone knows that It's whether one of her acolytes is going to win or the establishment figure is going to win. One has been promoted by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, the other by Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. So this is really a war between the progressives and the establishment within the Democratic Party. And there is the real potential that the progressive arm is going to win, and that there is going to be much more of a progressive element to the Democratic Party, and that essentially that we're going to get a right-wing party that are a populist right-wing party, which is now dominating the Republicans, facing off against a left-wing populist arm of the Democrats. And that could quite easily be the kind of dichotomy that we're offered as an election approaches in November. And that's a big source of uncertainty. But monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time. Now, we do have short-term overbought conditions, so we may see some pause and consolidation. But that's true mostly for the NASDAQ and the FANG sectors. The S&P 500 is really quite steady above the trend mean and the psychological 3000 level, and that provides, I think, a really quite convenient area of potential support. We continue to have this sequence of higher reaction lows off the lows in March, and a series of ranges, one above another. But it is looking increasingly likely that with the USA responsible for more than half of all stimulus in the globe, that it is going to result in a weaker currency overall. And the euro was in positive territory in here today. It wasn't quite able to hold all of the advance, but so far this doesn't look like much more than a consolidation in the region of that psychological peak from back in March around the 114 level. And when we look at it on a weekly basis, we can clearly see that the sequence of lower rally highs has been broken. If we are in fact going to have more of a weaker dollar than a stronger dollar, then that is potentially quite positive for industrial resources. And the copper price is also steadying from the region of the trend mean in a very similar manner to what the S&P 500 is doing. When we then think about the nickel price, that had been one of the better performers into the peak in September of last year, and it continues to consolidate here. But the most important thing it has done has been to break that sequence of lower rally highs. There's the clear potential that infrastructure development is going to be a significant factor in 2021 through to about 2025 for the vast majority of economies. One thing that I thought was quite interesting is that there is an effort underway to take Vedanta private. And in fact, the ownership of the share of the company is being transferred between private sectors. Well, that is also, I think, evident of interest in the industrial resources sector. When we think about some of the bigger companies like BHP Billiton, then they've also started to steady from the region of their respective trend means. And this also looks like very similar to what we've seen with the copper price. Rio Tinto, which has been marketing itself as an environmentally friendly producer, despite the fact that there are significant questions about how it is treating stock landmarks in the Pilbara region in Australia, it is now testing the sequence of lower rally highs from the peak in 2019, and it is right in the region of its peak from back in 2010 and 11. And this has been a really quite impressive rebound off the lows in 2015 and 16, and indeed from the lows back in March as well. It does hold out the prospect that we're going to see new all-time highs from the resources sector in the not-so-distant future. And of course, that is contingent on liquidity continuing to be a dominant factor and the potential for infrastructure development to be more of a global phenomenon. When then we can look at the FTSE 350 mining index, it is now also back above its trend mean and coming back into the region of the sequence of lower rally highs, but the 20,000 level has been an area of resistance now for most of the last 8 years, and I think it's quite likely we're going to see it taken out over the course of the next few months. Gold prices popped on the upside in here today and have now pushed on to a new recovery high and look quite likely to go on and test that psychological $1,800 area. I would say that it looks substantially more or better supported at this attempt at crossing the $1,800 area than it did back in 2011 and 2012. And that would suggest that we're potentially now on the cusp of gold moving on to a new all-time high in US dollars. But when we look at it in other currencies, we can see that it's not simply about the weakness of the dollar, that gold is in fact finding support in the region of its trend mean against the Australian dollar. It's finding support above its previous peak against the pound. Even the euro, which has been resurgent, we're also seeing gold putting in a higher reaction low. When we then think about some of the other currencies like the Brazilian real, which have had substantial rallies, gold is also bouncing in here as well. So there is clear evidence that gold has found support against a whole basket of additional currencies, because while I think focus right now is very much on dollar weakness, the reality is that every country right now is engaged in a battle against deflation. They're all increasing the supply of their respective currencies. They're all running deficits. And none of them seem to have much of a plan for how the deficits are going to be paid back other than to inflate the value of the currency, or to basically print it until there is some form of rebellion from the markets. And when we think about what is happening in terms of the government bond markets, it's the 30-year treasury is, I think, where we need to pay particular attention. The size of the Federal Reserve's position in 30-year bonds has increased substantially with this quantitative easing round. But there is a clear succession of high reaction lows evident on the yield. And that does suggest that we have some distribution underway. And the 2% level is an awfully big psychological level for the 30-year. There is the clear potential that bond investors are going to call time on the liquidity-fueled rally long before the Fed does. And that, I think, is worth keeping a particular eye on. We are on the cusp of a new inflationary cycle. It's really obvious. Anyone who has got eyes in their head can potentially at least understand that you can't increase the supply of money indefinitely, and that it is only acceptable as long as the velocity of money remains low. And when we look at the velocity of money, it has been trending downwards for years. And this figure was last updated at the end of last year. So it is reported with a one-quarter lag in arrears by a quarter. So really what we're looking at is velocity from 6 months ago. Now, when we go back and think about the fact that the velocity of money has been contracting now for more than 20 years, it must have collapsed entirely when the coronavirus struck. Now, we're not out of the coronavirus yet. There are still cases that are increasing in a number of countries. We still don't have a vaccine, and the application of technology to deliver on contact tracing has been spotty at best. It's not as if there isn't the potential and the willingness from some circles to try and deliver these kinds of solutions, but there is a lot of reticence among the companies and people to give the government more insight into the lives of people. But the reality here is that eventually we're going to have an economic recovery, that all of this money getting thrown at the economy and the potential that a vaccine will be provided, that we are going to get back to some form of normal and that economic activity will turn back upwards. That's going to increase the velocity of money. And when that happens, there is going to be an inflationary outcome. That's absolutely got to be baked into the pie here. So that means that long-dated bonds are a really bad investment. And I think that that is what we're starting to see priced in with that very mild sequence of higher reaction lows on the 30-year. We also know that the corporate profits have been going nowhere really for most of the last 6 years. And this figure was updated in here today. Just this chart hasn't updated yet. So we can see that it did pull back rather sharply in the first quarter of this year. And of course, this is another index that is reported with a quarterly lag. It's quite likely that corporate profits in the second quarter aren't going to be anything to write home about either, and not least because it's going to end in the next 7 days, and the first 2 months of this quarter saw a very significant contraction. And yet, stock markets continue to race higher. Well, this is creating the conditions for a bubble to evolve, and it generally means that this is the easiest time to make money. It is the time that when people who throw caution to the wind tend to make money easiest, that then sucks additional money into the market. There is a lot of money in cash right now, so there is obviously the potential that some of it could be encouraged back into the market on pullbacks. And obviously then we need to keep an eye on the bond markets, because if yields start to rise, it will inhibit the ability of central banks to continue to stimulate. I think it's also worth watching what's happening with the oil price, because it was a little bit weaker in here today, but so far it has been quite steady around this $40 area. As long as it is ranging above the $35 area, then this will continue to look like a first step above the type 2 bottom, and there will be potential for additional higher to lateral ranging. Obviously, a spike in oil prices would be very inflationary before it would contribute to a significant economic issue. We're just nowhere near that kind of threat right now, but oil prices have certainly doubled, and gasoline prices have also been rallying, and that I think is more of a factor that might give us some influence or some indication of economic activity starting to recover. And of course, if economic recovery is starting to pick up, then inflationary pressures are also likely to mount. We have an extraordinarily low interest rate environment, and that is evident all over the world. The quantity of bonds with a negative yield has been steady over the course of the last few weeks, but it is still around the $13 trillion level. One of the factors that has contributed to the ability of countries like Japan to persist for such a long time was because they had the availability to go somewhere else to pick up a higher yield, the proverbial yen carry trade. But with interest rates rock bottom everywhere, then that will start to create interest in the emerging markets. And I think that with a stronger gold price, stronger commodities, and a weaker dollar, then that is also beneficial for the emerging markets sector. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.